The route of this year's Iditarod has been altered for the third time ever because there's not enough snow on the ground. The 45th running of the Alaskan Sled Dog Race gets started on Monday. 72 teams will compete in the 1,000-mile trek from Fairbanks to Nome. And behind many of the world's top mushers is an army of cheap, semi-skilled labor. Dog handlers manage kennels and help train the dogs for competition and more. As Alaska Public Media's Zachariah Hughes found, the system thrives on an unconventional economic arrangement.
In a cold, dim room, Tara Ciccatello stirs a bucket of frothy brown liquid.
I am making dog food.
It's a mix of kibble and frozen meat that's been thawed into a soupy gruel. Ciccatello grabs a heavy bucket in each hand, trundles out to the dog yard, and starts slopping food into bowls.
Hey, buddy. Here's some supper.
Ciccatello's in charge of feeding 25 dogs twice a day. After they eat, she retraces her steps, scooping away piles of poop.
Literally, I just take the sled in one hand, the shovel in the other, and I just knock it out.
The whole routine takes about an hour. Most of the time, it's in the dark, under a headlamp, and there are no days off, even when it's 50 degrees below zero. This is the less glamorous side of dog mushing. Ciccatello is a handler for a relatively new musher, Kristen Bacon, who finished her first Iditarod last year. This season, Bacon's training out of champion musher Jeff King's Husky Homestead near Cantwell, Alaska. Ciccatello gets a small apartment and a modest monthly stipend. In exchange, she does everything from feedings to practice runs to mushing the dogs in mid-distance races, one of which the two women are getting ready for now. Bacon's sitting on the floor, plotting where they'll rest.
Remember that you need to think about Tal Vista to Deshka Landing is 75 miles, and whether you really want to run a 75-mile run or you're going to have a little nap.
The logistics are complex, sort of like planning a multi-day camping trip spread over 200 miles, but also with a pack of animals attached by ropes. They're assembling drop bags with all the supplies they'll need, from food to overstuffed Ziplocs full of dog booties that are color-coordinated to match each animal's paw size.
Libby red, Yama orange, Skeeter red.
This is where good help makes a huge difference. Bacon needs a lot from her handler, particularly because she's not a professional musher and still has to work a job to pay her bills. She's a physical therapist for kids and regularly travels to small communities far away from her kennel. And when she's gone, she needs Ciccatello to not just dog sit, but put miles on her team training for serious races.
I either need to pay to have really good help here with my dogs and trust that whoever's here taking care of them and feeding them is doing an appropriate job so that I can go work.
For handlers, though, the economic logic is less conventional. The arrangement falls somewhere between an apprenticeship and indentured servitude. Handlers are subject to the same state labor laws and minimum wage standards as other employees. A director with the Department of Labor says hardly any claims are reported to the state about labor abuses within the mushing industry. And for Ciccatello, the grit is a selling point.
I love adventure and I love going out and doing things. And so to me, just like sitting in an office all day was not fulfilling.
Ciccatello got her start mushing dogs when she lived in Nome, where, full disclosure, we were briefly roommates and stayed in touch. Handling dogs is a bit of a career gamble for her if she ever decides to leave the mushing world.
I wish I could tell you I had like long-term life plan plans, but I'm really bad at making those. So far, I've been living my life season to season.
You don't get into mushing to make money. That's something I heard from other handlers, too, like Sean Underwood, who moved up to Alaska from Georgia to commercial fish and stuck around when he got the chance to handle Jeff King's champion dogs.
I graduated with a degree in economics, minored in Spanish, and now I'm just running a 12-dog team, so I don't know where the supply and demand chart for economics comes into play there.
Underwood is excited, but a little nervous as he gets ready to run the same race as Ciccatello. Except this is his first time ever competing on a sled. He never expected to be in this position. Back in Atlanta, he was a hotel valet and substitute Spanish teacher. He likes handling dogs better. Even though financially he's just breaking even, he still thinks of this as a deposit toward his future.
You know, if I'm not saving for retirement at 25 right now, I'm not super worried about it. For now, it's been 100% about investing in an experience and doing something that I'll be talking about and thinking about and drawing from for the rest of my life.
In Underwood's calculus, adventure is the profit. I follow up with Cicatello by phone about how the race went.
Hello?
She came in 17th, three spots behind Underwood. Although, in her defense,
he was running just 18.
Still, Cicatello now has enough race miles to be qualified for next year's Iditarod, if she decides to stick around. For Here and Now, I'm Zachariah Hughes in Denali, Alaska.
And Zachariah's story is part of the Iditapod, a daily podcast about the race from Alaska Public Media and KNOM Radio in Nome. You can find it on iTunes.